Hi, I'm Carrie Butler, and you're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. I have a special offer for my listeners. You can get my new course at carriebutlercoach.com/Broadway Podcast.
Once I played a Penny who just couldn't stop the beat. Yes, with roller skates on her feet. Those is recently deceased. A real cool mom, musical version of Tina Fey. Tina Fey, now come with me and fly. I am your host, Miss Carrie Butler. Together, you and I are brave.
We have Scott Coulter with us, who is a musical theater performer, has worked extensively in musical theater, but has also started this whole other career. He's won awards in Cabaret, Mac Awards, and then he has also started his own business. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you dreamed of when you were a kid, how you got your start.
Sure. Well, when I was a kid, all I wanted to do was sing. That's all I ever wanted to do from the time I was, you know, four. Mm-hmm. And then through a weird twist of circumstances, I found myself auditioning for the musical theater program at the University of Cincinnati.
Great program.
Yes, College Conservatory of Music, CCM. And I got in. So I took that as a sign from the universe that I should go. So I did. And when I graduated, my class was the first. Cincinnati is the very first musical theater program in the country. It's the first school to offer a degree. Yeah. They just celebrated their 50th year, but they were the very first. And Pam Myers, Tony nominee from Company, Another 100 People, was the first graduate from the school. Anyway, just a little plug for the school. But when I got out, we were the first class to do a showcase in New York City. And got an agent from that. So moved to the city with an agent, did the auditioning thing, booked my very first audition, which was for the first production of Floyd Collins, Adam Gettle's Floyd Collins.
Yeah.
In Philadelphia. So I did that, and then I did the national tour of Forever Plaid. And there's a point to this story. While I was on that tour, I got called in to come in and replace Duty in Greece, the Sam Harris role in Greece, the crazy high, those magic changes. And they flew me in from the tour. I auditioned on the stage. Back then you got to audition on the stage a lot, and those were the days. And I nailed it. And I remember the music director ran down the aisle after the song. I was like, oh my gosh, where will you be for the next 2 days? How can we reach you? Do we have your phone number? I said, yeah. You know, it's all great. He said, okay, fabulous. You can really do this. You can do this. And I left, and the stage door, man at the stage door said, you know, welcome to the family.
Wow.
Actually, Paul Castree was actually there, and he congratulated me after my audition. It's going to be so great to have you. And I never heard from them.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah.
That is the worst.
Yeah. They never heard one way or the other. It wasn't through my agent. I had gotten the tour from an open call. So this was Stuart Howard Casting was just contacting me that way. And at that moment, I was devastated.
Yes.
And I'd only been here, I think, maybe 2 years in New York, but I was like, never, ever again will I wait for someone to give me permission to do what I want to do.
That is a great story.
Yeah, so that's the point. That's the point of that whole buildup.
But so did you ever hear, like, now that you've been in the business forever, did you ever say, hey, what happened there?
No. Wow. I mean, I think I know what happened. I think I had been on a tour bus for 6 months. I'd probably gained a little bit of weight since the last time they'd seen me, but not enough that I couldn't, you know, do the role. I don't know what it was. It was just really, I was the only person they saw that day for the role.
Wow.
They were seeing Daisy Fuentes for Rizzo and Billy Huffsey's two soap stars for Kaniki and me. And I look at it as a gift because, had it gone the other way, I wouldn't be sitting here talking with you.
Yes.
So, but I really, it was sort of a shakeup and made me realize that, so often as performers, we put the power in other people's hands.
Yes, we have no control.
Yes. But that's actually doesn't have to be true. Mm-hmm. There are so many avenues open to us that we can sort of make things happen. So, long story short, I decided I'm going to do my own concert. So I called some of the people that I graduated Cincinnati with, and we remounted our senior showcase as a cabaret act for four people instead of 15. And the last night, a critic walked in and ended up giving us a Bistro Award for Best Review of the Year.
Oh,
isn't
my
that amazing?
Gosh. gosh.
And at that awards presentation, I met two other winners. They were songwriters. Marcy Heisler and Zina Goldrich won
Love
that night.
Love them.
And they said, will you come sing with us? And I just met them at the award show. And I said, sure. So I've been singing with them, I think, ever since that night. And through that, they wrote a musical called Dear Edwina, which is a very famous.
I'm on the recording of Dear Edwina.
Yeah. Well, Scott, Edwina's love interest, is me.
Oh.
I'm that Scott. They named him after me. It was written for me. Yeah, I was away when the recording happened, so I didn't get to do it. I'm so bummed. But from Dear Edwina, we did it at the Berkshires, and I met Stephen Schwartz, who saw the concert and was like, oh my gosh, who are you? And then a month later, he called me and asked me if I would tour with an evening of his music with him at the piano and Debbie Gravitt and Liz Calloway and myself.
Oh my gosh.
So everything just sort of happened, you know, once I sort of said, I'm done waiting. So after many years of doing that Stephen Schwartz concert, the man that booked it sold his business. He was done.
Oh.
And everybody was like, oh, yeah, that was a nice ride. But I, of course, needed that to keep happening. Mm-hmm. So I said to Stephen, would you mind if I tried booking this show myself? And he said, no, knock yourself out. So that's sort of how the whole thing started.
That is an inspirational story. Go you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I love it. This is exactly what I loved having in my podcast.
Good. I'm glad.
So now, that must be a totally different, like, mindset to book the tour.
It is a mindset.
Set of skills that you...
Yeah. Well, I didn't really have those skills. Which I think is probably the most important thing I can tell you today is that I think if you should always say yes.
Yes.
If you don't say yes, someone else will.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's, this is probably a terribly inappropriate thing to say, but I always say, unless someone asks me to sing Old Man River, I'm going to say yes.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's, for one thing, it's too low. For another thing, I'm the wrong race. Like, it's just not right.
Right.
But anything else someone asks you to do, if there's any humanly way that you think you can work it out, then you should say yes and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, that's what we're all doing.
Right.
Which you don't know until you're sort of in the midst of it. And you're like, oh, everyone's sort of figuring this out. Anyway, I did not know what I was doing when I started booking shows. And so I had for many years a business partner, a guy in LA who had a record label. And we combined forces and he showed me the ropes. He really gave me a great education. And then we split about 7 years ago. So now the company is, I have my company and he has his own company. So, mm-hmm. But he was a huge help to me.
And I know Debbie Gravitt, and she has told me a little bit about what that lifestyle is like, where she will, you know, just be gone from her family all weekend doing shows, but it pays the bill. Like she almost doesn't want to do theater because
it doesn't pay as well.
Yeah.
Well, Debbie is sort of a unique example in that she has been doing this for a very long time. After she won the Tony, she's done concert work ever since.
Right.
And the concert world has changed in recent years. I now do a lot of symphony concert stuff.
Oh, and, I always wanted to get into that.
It's great. Well, I actually want to talk to you about that.
That's okay.
That's a different conversation.
Okay.
But it used to pay incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
And it still is pretty good. But there's now this whole thing with licensing where you have to actually pay to arrange a song for an orchestra, which has always sort of been somewhere hidden in the ASCAP BMI clause that every venue pays, but it's never really been enforced. And because the music industry has changed so much and revenue streams have dried up, they're really going after that now. So it can cost sometimes up to $500 a song per performance just to arrange it for an orchestra.
So once you have it, then
it's per performance. You have the arrangement, but you have to buy the right to arrange it each time out. It's ridiculous.
Your concert is so expensive,
it isn't even worth it anymore.
Right.
So we've all had to get really creative about how to create concerts where some things we're licensing and some things are already exist and some things, you know, you own. So it's a different sort of animal now. So it's still great fun and there's still money to be made, but the money that we get to Sharon as performers and producers is less than it used to be. But performing arts centers don't have that problem, so they're a booming market. So
So now do you have somebody else that you work with or do you do everything yourself?
I have several employees that work for me. I have an assistant, I have a booker for symphonies, I have a booker for performing arts centers, but at the end of the day I'm pretty nonstop doing stuff.
And you have a lot of shows, right?
We do. We have, I think, about 15 shows for performing arts centers and symphonies that are out at any given time.
Wow.
And we're on the road between 38 and 40 weeks out of the year.
Wow.
Which is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not full weeks, but, you know, half weeks or weekends or stuff like that.
And how would young performers get to do this, you think? I mean, you kind of, your story is already inspirational because you could just do what you did, just put up a cabaret.
Sure. Well, I think that's a great way to do it. The other thing is to always, like I keep going back to, always say yes. I remember when I first moved here and people would ask me to do stuff and I, of course, would say yes. And I would talk to my mom and dad back in Tennessee and my mom's like, are you getting paid? I was like, no, you've got to get paid. I was like, no, you have to sometimes.
That's right.
You just have to do it.
That's
and
right.
Because you make the connections and you meet
people. And the more,
people.
And you learn from every experience.
Yeah. And nowadays, a lot of the kids that come to New York, because I work with a lot of young people and they're all terrifically talented and they're lovely people, but a lot of them are hesitant to do things for free.
Yes.
And I don't know where that started.
Mm-hmm.
But you're gonna knock yourself out of contention for a lot of things if you don't make those connections early on. You never know what saying yes to something for a free concert is gonna lead to.
I did so much stuff for free when I started out.
Yeah.
Plays, everything. And then, you know, I would have another job that was flexible that you could actually make a living.
Sure.
But you have to.
Sure.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
So do you hire people for your shows? And where do you find the people from?
Well, I have the name of my company is Spot On Entertainment, Spot hyphen on. And it's a hyphenated word. And it's basically my friends. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. So it's listen, if you're going to be on the road, there are a million people in New York City that can sing. There are a handful of people in New York City that are nice and can sing. And you know that. Like nice
right,
people,
right.
That it really makes a difference.
Yes.
And you want to work with people that are nice and that have your back and that are going to do, you know, be a team player. So I have a repertory company of people that I use that we sort of rotate in and out of the shows. But I'm always looking for new talent. And I'm not suggesting that any of you listening do this, but I do get email inquiries and submissions all the time for people that want to work.
Oh.
So I found people that way. I'm a director of original programming at 54 Below, Fine Sense 54 Below. So I create shows there. I meet people there. I, for many years, directed a show at Town Hall called Broadway's Rising Stars, which was like 24 of the best new musical theater graduates. So I've gotten a lot of my performers from those 10 years there. So just, you know, around, just different places. What is interesting, and I will, especially maybe for younger people, is that once you cross the Hudson River, nobody in America, this is the sad reality, knows anybody's name.
Mm-hmm.
Like the big Broadway names that we know and love, very few of them will sell at a 5,000 seat house.
True.
In, you know, Peoria.
Yes.
The names just don't, they don't, it used to be that, you know, you'd do a Broadway show, you'd win a Tony, you'd get a TV show.
Right.
You know, like when
right.
I was a kid, Linda Lavin was the star of Alice, you
uh-huh.
know, came straight from Broadway. Bonnie Franklin, One Day at a Time. That doesn't happen so much anymore. There are a handful of people for whom that happens, but the business has just changed so much. So really it's not the performer name that matters so much as the what you're selling, the show name. So
right.
The theme of the show, they're going to go see a show called, we have a show called Bette Babs and Beyond, for example.
Oh, okay.
Which is Bette Midler,
yes.
Barbara Streisand, an all-female vocalist. So it doesn't really matter who's in that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go see the show because the title sounds intriguing. We have a show that's all the music based on the novel, The Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
So stuff from The Wizard of Oz, from Wicked, The Wiz, pop songs, like
yes.
Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. So it doesn't really matter who's in there. So that gives someone younger without maybe perhaps a resume, but that has this idea or this vision, the permission to go ahead and create something.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to wait till you have a star name.
Right.
Just make a star product.
Is there a different skill set to doing concert work?
It's completely different.
Hmm.
to be in a show 8 times a week, you are you don a costume, you don a character, mm-hmm. you are fulfilling someone else's vision, basically. But to do concert work, it's just you for the entirety of the performance.
Right.
You're selling yourself, your personality, your skills, your talent, your vision, and your voice. So it's a lot of people can do one or the other. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people can do both. And you'll see concerts of someone, you're like, oh, this really isn't their thing. Or
right.
somebody like, oh my God, they were born to do this. Like, uh-huh. this is where they really shine. So it is completely different. And because there's no fourth wall in concerts, you really have to have a rapport with the audience and be able to, like, you know, handle anything that's thrown your
that's
way.
Right.
You know, you
yeah.
can't, you know, when the phone goes off, you can actually address it. When, you know,
yeah.
when someone's disrupted, you can address it. When someone's laughing, you can, you know, there's a lot of, it's a lot more, it's more fun. It's more freeing, I think. And it, for me, I think it's a lot more fun.
Uh-huh. I mean, I find it very nerve-wracking just to think that for, you know, the next hour, 45 minutes, it's just me.
Right.
And, you know, and like a lot of the songs I'll do, like the audience knows the words. And so I'm like, oh my
right.
gosh, if I forget my words,
right, right,
they'll
right.
know.
That's
they'll
right.
be singing along.
That's right. But, you know, there's something very forgiving about concert work, too. Those people are just so happy to sort of be in that atmosphere.
Right.
And it doesn't happen as much as it used to in the past. You know, like concerts are so expensive now. You know, and they're in arenas. I remember when I was a kid, I used to see famous people at the theater in Chattanooga, like, you know, maybe 1,000 seats, 1,200 seats. It still felt intimate. And
yeah.
now everything is so full-blown arena
oh.
that it's nice to have a chance to see people in smaller settings again. And it feels like you're part of something. So I think they're forgiving. I
uh-huh.
think, and when you go up on your words, you can address it like in
right.
a live concert, but you can't in a show.
True.
Like the train keeps moving.
True,
you know,
true,
you can't
true.
Really,
right.
you sort
yeah.
of have to, it's fight or flight, I guess.
Yeah, you'd be like, let's start over. do you see any young people making mistakes? Like you said, one thing is them not saying yes and not working for free.
Well, so, this is probably going to get me, you know, banned from the city, but I'm so sick of young people doing concerts where they're supposed to learn one song or maybe even two songs. And they're asking the audience to pay $50, $60, $70 for a ticket. And they use a music stand.
Oh.
I'm like, you know what? If you at 25 years old can't learn this song, you just need to pack it up and go home.
Mm-hmm.
It's sloppy. It's lazy. It looks unprofessional. It puts the main thing it does, it puts a barrier between you and the audience.
Uh-huh.
And the whole thing we're there to see is the connection between the singer and the audience. And if you're, you know, looking down,
mm-hmm.
the magic is instantly broken. And listen, I am a great believer in cheat sheets. You know, when you've got an hour and a half of stuff to do with facts and names and lyrics, it's okay
right.
to have like a little cheat sheet here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Like put it on top of the piano, tape it to the monitor.
Yes.
One of the biggest names in the Great American Songbook always has lyrics taped to the monitor. One of the monitors isn't even on. It's just for lyrics, but nobody knows because
mm-hmm.
you have to have, you know, ways to sort of help you through like a big evening like that. But if you're doing one song, just learn it.
Yeah.
I would say learn it or say, I'm sorry, I can't do this date. If you can't do it, for me, that's my thing. But there's a whole big movement now. You know, you go see the shows and there's 10 music stands across the stage. And it's not a reading.
Yeah.
It's a concert. It's a performance. Learn the song. I that is a big no-no for me. It's just a big turnoff. And it telegraphs to me that you're not really serious about this.
Uh-huh.
And you want to work with and you want to go see people that are serious.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Do you have any other advice for young people starting out? Anything you wish you knew when you just were starting out?
when I was first moved here, my roommate Jessica Hendy was and I moved here together. She's a Broadway performer and she was Grisabella in every variation of Cats that's ever been in New York. But when we first moved here, of course, we lived in a fourth floor walk up in the middle of Hell's Kitchen, which is not where you wanted to live at the time. And then within the first month, we went to get our fortunes told, our palms read downtown. And the woman looked at my palm and she said, oh, this line right here, you're going to be very successful. But this right here, it's going to take a very long time.
Oh.
And I was like, okay.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, that's, I just sort of wanted someone to say, you're going to be okay.
Uh-huh.
But I think if she had said, you're going to be very successful, and this right here means you have to start today, then I think my whole life probably would have been different. Do you know what I'm saying? I think the power of what we mentally think really can affect the outcome of things. And so I would say just, you know, hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. Don't wait. I mean, it may take a long time, but don't act as if it's going to take a long time. And really, you know, just show up, be present, do the work, say yes, show up prepared, and be willing to take, you know, the reins, be willing to take control and make your own things happen. It's so easy nowadays with YouTube. And
yes.
I mean, you can put stuff out there in ways that we couldn't, or I couldn't when I moved here. And so now the world is sort of your oyster. There's nothing holding you back from doing it. I think someone should create, well, here's $1 million idea I'm going to give out.
Oh, you want to give it for free?
Yeah. Someone should create a series of videos. And Rogers, after I said this, Rogers and Hammerstein, their estate has sort of started doing this, but like just videos, like MTV videos of musical theater songs.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Don't you want to see another 100 people staged in the middle of Times Square?
Yeah.
Or, oh, what a beautiful morning in Central Park as the sun comes up. I mean, somebody could make $1 billion doing that.
Yeah.
And it's out there and readily available. And you all have the skills. You can do it with your phone.
That's right.
But, you know, anything that sort of gets your name out there and advances the art form and, you know, brings you an audience, I think is just do it. Don't wait for somebody else to give you the permission.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. I learned so much from this interview. What would you like to plug? Do you have any concerts coming up around?
You know, we have concerts. Like I said, we're on the road about 40 weeks a year. So we have almost every week, and there's a spot on show somewhere in some city. So you can go to our website, www.spot-onentertainment.com, and see what's going on. Check us out.
Thank you so much for being with
us. Thanks for having me.
Scott Coulter. Thank you so much for listening to Breaking Broadway, produced by Broadway Podcast Network. Opening song by Aaron Accurso and Joey Mazzarino. If you like this podcast and want to hear more, please like, leave a comment, or share with your friends. See you next time for more insider tips to making it on Broadway.
Together, you and I are breaking Broadway.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.